It's the pride of Philadelphia. Fairmount Park is considered to be one of the world's finest urban parks. It wasn't always so. The legacy is laid out in a new book entitled City in a Park, A History of Philadelphia's Fairmount Park System. Joining me are the book's authors, James McClellan, Executive Director Emeritus of the Philadelphia Art Alliance, and Lynn Miller, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Temple University. Jim, Lynn, welcome to Newsworks Tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Jim, the book is its own description, a celebration of Fairmount Park, which was established to protect Philadelphia's water supply.
Correct.
Take us back to those dicey days in the late 18th and early 19th century where plague broke out repeatedly.
Yes, that plagues were breaking out left and right, yellow fever particularly, and it was discovered by city fathers that this was coming from polluted streams and our water supply was terrible. So they knew they had to do something about it because the city was growing by leaps and bounds.
At that stage, was it yet primarily industrial runoff or more agricultural?
Well, it was a combination of industrial plus they polluted streams and wells got polluted. And that's what was making people sick.
So what came of the effort?
Well, what came of the effort?
Philadelphia Water Works?
The Philadelphia Water Works, yes. They had started with a pump system at Center Square, which is where City Hall stands today. And they had a pumping station there, which pumped water from the Schuylkill through wooden pipes that were sent through the city.
It was, by the way, the first municipal water system in the whole world. Starting in 1799. Nothing past the Roman age, I think, had done anything like this before.
So many now rely on the park for any number of recreational activities, but
Absolutely.
Apparently that wasn't its original intended use. It was much more just for contemplative strolling, for example.
It's true that in the early days, there wasn't yet a real concept of using public parks for exercise and real what we would think of as recreation. The idea was to contemplate nature, get away from the crowded city, and don't forget that Philadelphia, from its origins, was dense and crowded because, first of all, it was a very small area. And so once the decision was made just after the turn of the 19th century to move the waterworks from Center Square up to what William Penn had called Fair Mount, that highest point just outside the city boundary— From that point on, that area right around Fairmount became a pleasure ground. And then as the park expanded, largely in the decade right after the Civil War, all the way up the Schuylkill, the whole thing became a pleasure ground.
One way to appreciate where the park is now is to look at where it came from and speak of that dark period where you called it almost a self-fulfilling prophecy, this downward spiral of disrepair.
It's right. True that, of course, Philadelphia was in decline for several decades following World War II. That is to say, the population was diminishing, and certainly there were fewer and fewer bucks to spend on the parks. It showed in, for example, the decline of the structures at the waterworks and elsewhere, and we're happy to be able to report, and we focus on this especially in the last portion of the book, that starting in about 1980 or 90, money began to be raised privately by a variety of groups. The lead has been taken by the Fairmount Park Conservancy to restore so much that had been deteriorating. If you go to the Fairmount Waterworks today, you will see structures including pavilions, walkways along the edge of the mountain, all of which look as good as they must have in about 1840. One couldn't have said that 30, 40, 50 years ago at all.
The book does take a stab toward the end of trying to quantify the value of the park to the city. How can you ever arrive at a number?
Well, this was a study done several years ago at the behest of the park system, and the conclusion that these authors reached was that there are all kinds of factors that enter into determining the value of the parks, including the value of property around the parks, the value of the tourist dollars for people that come into the parks, and a number of other kinds of things like this. They admit that quantifying all of that has to be done with a very broad brush, But the conclusion they reach is that the parks are worth vastly more than they cost.
The name, City in a Park. Who arrived at the title, and what were you thinking of with that?
Well, among the many photos in the book is a photograph taken from Belmont Plateau, which shows the city skyline in the background and in the foreground, the parkland. And that really gave us the idea for the title of the book, when we saw that finished photograph.
We also are very much aware, as we worked on the book, that park acreage has been increasing, particularly under the Nutter administration. There are now something like 11,000 acres of parkland in Philadelphia. That increases the ratio of green space to people considerably. And somebody, someplace, used this phrase, it's becoming a city in a park. We thought that was catchy, and that's why we used it.
And fully, what, some 10% of the city's acreage is Fairmount Park acreage?
That's right.
Fairmount
that's
Park
right.
system
that's
acreage.
Right. Yeah.
For tourists coming into Philadelphia, there's no better guide for getting started. But for those who've resided here for years, decades, a lifetime, I'd like each of you to consider some perhaps hidden pleasures or treasures that might be off the beaten path. Anything come to mind?
That's a big subject, too. What comes to mind immediately for me is, because I love them so much, are the country homes and villas that have been, you know, beautifully restored and are open to, many of them are open to the public. And it's easy access with public transportation, and organizations like the Art Museum have their own tours specifically to visit the houses. So that would be number one on my list for tourists to see, especially this time of year when they're decorated for the holidays.
Coming into the cooler weather.
That's right. That's right.
Lynn, how about for you?
There are too many things for me to know where to start, but I think one thing that's off the beaten path for visitors still, probably because it's so new, are places like the Race Street Pier, which was only created several years ago. Philadelphians, especially younger Philadelphians, have learned about it as a destination. It's a wonderful place to go peer up at the underside of the Benjamin Franklin Bridge from there. You can also run there and back again to wherever you come from.
And bike.
There will be more of these kinds of things all along the Delaware. We have one already that has opened in the past year at Washington Street, Washington Green Pier, and another one farther down where the shopping center is. There will be these kinds of islands of park all along the Delaware where they never existed before. The idea ultimately, this will take probably another century to get complete, but it's a wonderful plan, is to connect with greenways everything on the Schuylkill with everything up the Delaware that runs through Philadelphia.
That is a long-term dream,
yes.
Given that the contrast between the Schuylkill and its banks and the Delaware River is vast.
Right.
You're both so passionate about the subject, and it's such a wonderful park. Thank you for this book, and thanks for joining us on Newsworks tonight.
Thank you very much.
Lynn Miller, Professor Emeritus of Political Science at Temple University, and James McClellan, Executive Director Emeritus of the Philadelphia Art Alliance. The book is entitled City in a Park, A History of Philadelphia's Fairmount Park System.